This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
He got him with the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Whoa. Hey, here comes a mission. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the September 5th edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. Coming up on this week's edition of the show, we are going to preview Saturday's UFC 228, of course, headlined by Tyron Woodley defending the welterweight title against Darren Till. Plus, we're going to answer a question from our listener who had asked our top 10 MMA and boxing fights that have already happened or are going to happen in 2018. Plus, we'll have interviews with Darren Cruikshank, Seth Pazinski, and Blake Builder. Darren's going to be fighting Diego Brandão at Ryzen 13 on September 30th. Seth Pazinski going to be fighting Teddy Ash for the middleweight title at Unified 34 on September the 8th. And Blake is going to be a part of the King of the Cage event coming up on Saturday night as he's going to take on Dennis Linton. Plus, we'll have our weekly buy-sell segment. Those questions are going to range anywhere from UFC 229, MMA free agency, a little note on Darren Till, plus PFL, all that, and so much more coming up on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, if this is your first time listening to the show, really appreciate you checking us out. Be sure to hit that subscribe button on whatever podcasting app you're using, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or Google Play. Also, be sure to give us a rating and review. Really appreciate that. I think some of the ratings that we have gotten over the past couple of weeks. Daniel, how you doing, man?
I'm doing quite well, Jason. It always feels like things are picking up the week of a UFC pay-per-view. You know, sometimes we're left with a real questionable card, and there are some questions we have with this card. But at the end of the day, you got a solid main event. You got some great fights in the preliminary card. And whenever we're doing a UFC pay-per-view week, Jason, I always get a little bit more excited because usually these cards have some pretty noteworthy fights. And, man, I'm really looking forward to UFC 228.
I'm really looking forward to the preliminary card of this fight card. You know, I like the main event of Tyron Woodley versus Darren Till. The rest of the pay-per-view, kind of lukewarm on it. But when I look at these prelims, which, by the way, the televised prelims are on FX, not FS1 or FS2. They are on FX. I think you look at those final three matchups on the FX prelims, Rivera Dotson, Sterling Stamen, Esparza Suarez. I mean, those are... This is probably one of, if not the best, pay-per-view television prelim card the UFC has put on this year.
Yeah, like seriously, the fights you just mentioned are the second through fourth best fights on the card. You go the championship fight, and then you go those three FX fights. And some of it is due to the fact that you have a women's flyweight division that has a champion in Nico Montaña who you know, is a major, major underdog against an absolute warrior in Shevchenko. So that fight's just not interesting. And then, obviously, Zabit Magomed Sharipov was in line for a fight that would have cracked that top four against Yair Rodriguez. That fight's out. Then we get him against Brandon Davis. You know, really the only fight that's interesting to me on that main card is Andrade and Kovalevich. But that fight itself really pales in comparison to those three fights you did mention. You know, Rivera and Dotson, to me, is just a great bantamweight fight. Same goes for Stamen and Sterling. And then Suarez Esparza is a high-level women's strawweight fight that has a little sprinkle of Joe Silva matchmaking in there with Tatiana Suarez in the star-making spot. And there's even a part of me that is going to make sure I tune in live on Fight Pass to watch, according to him, future UFC champion Diego Sanchez take on Craig White. I cannot wait for that one.
And you know Diego believes that too. I mean, it's last week, let's be honest, last week there wasn't a ton going on in MMA. The whole Donald Cerrone, Jackson Wink thing was like this big story. And for me, like, it was like, man, this is just like a gym beef. Like, I'm not really big on it. And Diego came out and defended his gym, and then I saw where Leonard Garcia a training partner with Donald Cerrone at his ranch challenges Diego to a bare knuckle fight, and now Diego, it seems like he's kind of apologizing on some of the comments he made, which to me that was just a gym beef there. I mean, one of the things I was looking at Diego Sanchez and I was thinking, like, if Diego gets knocked out in the first round, is Dana White having that conversation with Diego that it's time to call it a career?
I think so. I think he has to. I mean, for Diego Sanchez, basically any guy who started when the Ultimate Fighter started, if they get brutal knockout losses, it's time to have that conversation, just because they've been in the cage for so long, they've been training for so long. And not only that, for Diego, you're talking about, if he does get knocked out, three consecutive knockout losses. We're talking four out of his last five fights. And addition to the fact that this guy must have so much attrition. So honestly, the conversation should probably be having had right now. He is taking on a tough opponent in Craig White, a guy who probably isn't at the level of an Ali Aquinta, who recently put away Diego Sanchez. So look, Diego is prone to getting knocked out. Anyone who's been punched in the face for more than a decade is probably prone to getting knocked out. I have a weird feeling he's going to sneak away with a victory. But with the loss, Jason, I mean, Diego's absolutely in the same boat Jake Ellenberger found himself last week. So I think that conversation will definitely be had. And I will say, though, like, it would be really magical, and this won't happen, but if Diego Sanchez put together like a run to the championship, you know, if you gave me the ability to pick one fighter in the UFC to magically give them a bean that they could eat and then become UFC champion, you know, win five fights in a row, win the championship, I think Diego Sanchez might be my number one pick to see that rocky journey happen. I really do. I would like to see him do yes cartwheel straight to the championship. That's probably not going to happen, but I do think against Craig White, he might actually get a victory here.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Diego, and you mentioned about those last two losses coming into this one, both in the first round against Ali Quinta and Matt Brown, he is 1-3 in his last four fights. All those losses have come by first round stoppage due to strikes. And because it's Diego Sanchez, we have to mention the amazing stat with Diego Sanchez. The fact of June 21st, 2008. Eight is the last time Diego Sanchez won a fight by stoppage.
Yeah, and so it's real hard to go out there and predict a submission or a knockout for Diego Sanchez, Jason. I mean, we're talking about 10 years, an entire decade. The amount of fights that have transpired in his career from that point to this point is tremendous. And it makes you question why that's the case. I think he has the ability to score points, though. I really do. I think he has the ability to win the fight positional-wise, as well as just volume of strikes. He's going to leave himself open for contested strikes, no doubt about it. The question is whether or not he gets hit in the perfect spot, in the right spot to put him away. I'm leaning on Lionheart, the dream, the nightmare, Diego Sanchez not actually getting put away. But it's not a bet I feel super confident about. I think if you're looking for underdogs, he's one I would go with. But I think it might be something that I'm a little sentimental about it, Jason. I think I might be biased here.
Oh, I mean, look, and I'll tell you, there's another guy that I'm biased towards just because I've had great conversations with him in the past, but I don't know. I'm very confident picking him, and that's Frank Camacho. Of course, I had Frank on last week's podcast. Just to mention quickly on Diego Sanchez's opponents, Craig White, of course, made his UFC debut on extremely short notice earlier this year against Neil Magny, lost in the first round via TKO, and of course it got headlined after the fact of just the massive weight cut that he had to do to take that fight. But one of the things we did want to mention was underdogs that we think have the best chance to win. And of course, we're recording this here on Wednesday morning, just 2 days before the weigh-ins, 3 days before the fights. In terms of fighters that have the best chance to win, obviously you're not going to go with two fighters who are both overwhelming underdogs, and that's Nico Montano, who's an 8-1 underdog. Also, you got Brand Davis, who's a 7.5-1 underdog. Of course, Brand Davis taking this fight on short notice when Yair Rodriguez pulled out of the fight against Magomed Sharipov. You know, so to me, you know, looking at the other fights, underdogs, main event is essentially a pick 'em right now. You know, Woodley minus 105, Darren Till minus 115. But, you know, some of the ones that really stick out to me, Daniel. First off, Carolina Kovacevic at plus 340 does stick out to me. I think this is a fight that likely is going to go 15 minutes. You know, Carolina is a, you know, a massive output of strikes. So if she can keep this fight on the feet, I think she's got a decent chance. Outside of that, you know, Jim Miller plus 120 is kind of interesting as well. Cody Stamen plus 115 jumps out to me. Outside of that, not a ton that really sticks out to me and say, you know, in terms of best chance to win.
Yeah, Kovacevic sticks out to me, but I'll tell you one that does. Is Roberto Sanchez. This guy, according to Best Fight Odds, is at plus 275 on Five Dimes and plus 284 at Sportbet. And he's taking on a guy in Jared Brooks who really hasn't impressed me in his UFC run so far. He really hasn't. And it's also a deal in which Jared Brooks just took this fight on like 1 or 2 or 3 days since we're recording this. Like this past week, he took this fight against Roberto Sanchez, a fighter in Sanchez who's coming off momentum, tapping out Joby Sanchez. So even if Roberto may not necessarily be a world beater, especially when you compare and contrast their pre-UFC careers, I think you would put a lot more weight in what Brooks has accomplished. I think at this point in time, given the circumstances, Jason, you're looking at Roberto Sanchez as an underdog. That's the guy I would put some money on. But I would also put some money on Kovacevic. Although in that fight, there is a clear path to victory for Jessica Andrade, and it's pretty simple. It's taking down Kovacevic.
I would say one of the things that just, you know, we talked about last week was not a big, you know, news week in terms of MMA, but one of those stories that was out there that is just a terrible look if you are the UFC has to do with Jessica Andrade and where she is talking about what she is doing basically to make, you know, make money in terms of, you know, selling her fight gear, you know, and, you know, doing other things to make some extra money, man. Just an awful look if you're the UFC, a look that you don't necessarily want out there. But, you know, that is, to me, when outside of the main event, because if you're going to buy this pay-per-view, you're buying it because of Woodley Till. Everyone understands that the rest of the main card is not something that really sticks out to you. You know, Shevchenko, Montano, I mean, does Nico have a 20% chance of winning?
No. I don't think so. I think it's
10.
And that at some point, yeah, at some point you say 10% because it is MMA. And maybe it is actually 20% because it is MMA. But I tell you what, man, the problem, it would be a phenomenal upset if Montano wins just because it's a combination of how good we know Shevchenko is and then the cast that Montano competed against on The Ultimate Fighter was just at a level that wasn't super impressive compared to the type of fighter Shevchenko was fighting. So the idea of Montano going out there and getting a victory is really hard to fathom. But if it does happen, Jason, boy, oh boy, do we have a great story. So I don't know what the percentage is. It's probably 20%, to be honest with you, maybe a little higher. The more you think about the random nature of this sport, I just don't see Montano winning, though. I just don't. And I think it's going to be a quick night for Shevchenko.
I definitely agree with you there. Before we talk about the main event, you know, outside of the main event, the fights that interest us the most, and to me, there's four fights that stick out to me, and these are in no particular order: Andrade, Kovacevic, Esparza, Suarez, Sterling, Stamen, Rivera, Dodson. You know, if I was going to rank those fights in terms of what interests me the most, number one would probably be Sterling Stamen. Number two would probably be Andrade Kovacevic. Three, Rivera Dotson. Four, Esparza Suarez.
In terms of ranking those fights as well, Jason, I'm kind of right there with you. I definitely agree with you. I think, honestly, that top three is pretty interesting. Number four with Suarez, Esparza is a fight I'm looking forward to, but a fight where it does seem like the writing is on the wall, in that the general expectation is Suarez is going to go out there and get the win over Esparza. Kovacevic, despite being an underdog, I think that fight's a lot closer. And then Dodson, Rivera, Sterling, Stamen, those to me are pick'em fights. Those are hard for me to predict. Those are fights where I personally think Rivera and Cody Stamann are going to come up the victors. But those two bantamweight fights, very, very much looking forward to that, as well as Andrade and Kovalevich. And then just in terms of other fights that are interesting to me, you know, Zabit Magomed Sharipov versus Randy Davis isn't a fight that is great. But I personally really enjoy watching Zabit perform. And I think this is a perfect opportunity for him to get a performance of the night type highlight reel victory. And also, it's not the greatest fight in the world. It's not a fight you think when you think main card. But Abdul Razak Al-Hassan versus Nico Price, I think, is going to be an enjoyable fight. These guys recently have showcased the ability to be exciting and to be victorious. And I think each of them is looking for a statement win. And while Razak Al-Hassan and Nico Price isn't going to crack that top four of non-main event fights I'm looking forward to, it's still a fight I have bookmarked and am looking forward to. And then in addition to that, just one other fight. Irina Adana is a fighter who really hasn't performed at the level that I thought she was going to early on when you were looking at what she was doing in Invicta. She had a tough loss against Leslie Smith, a tough loss against Caitlin Chikogian, and now she's coming off a victory. She's facing a tough opponent in Putilova, but it's interesting to see if she's going to return to form to kind of what we saw with all of her promise in Invicta.
One of the things I'll mention about Magomed Sharipov, and I'm going to have a DFS show later on this week with Pete Rogers. To me, you know, Magomed Sharipov is a guy to build your DFS roster around just based on this little nugget that when I was doing some research. And he is the second highest price fighter on DraftKings this week, Shevchenko, number one. But Magomed Sharipov has 17 takedowns in his three UFC fights. Brandon Davis has been taken down 14 times. And if you understand DraftKings scoring, takedowns are at a high priority. So I think Magomed Sharipov is going to, you know, score a lot of points for you. But, of course, that'll be up later on this week on the MMAReport.com. But, of course, the main event, Tyron Woodley versus Darren Till. You know, this is, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but my fear with this fight is this ultimately ends up being Woodley Thompson all over again, because Darren Till is a counter striker. But, you know, one of the things, and I was watching Dan Hardy's breakdown of this fight, and I thought he brought up a really interesting point about this matchup. And, you know, people are going to go back to that, you know, press conference they had in Vegas, where I think one of the things Darren Till did in that stare down is he made himself look so much bigger than maybe he necessarily was in terms of weight wise. My guess is weight wise, they were probably around the same range, but the way Till was standing, leaning over, he kind of had this bigger look to him. But, you know, Woodley obviously is a shorter fighter at 5'9". Darren Till at 6 feet. And this actually is probably going to be an advantage for Tyron Woodley, because there's a lot more legs there for him to go after to try to get this fight to the ground.
And you know what's crazy to me when you look at these two guys? I don't know how the body works. I really don't. But the fact that both these fighters have the exact same 74-inch reach.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's weird. It really is. And that's an important statistic, because, like, In all honesty, I almost feel like that's much more important than the height difference. The fact that there isn't an arm reach difference. If there was a major arm reach difference for Darren Till, that's when the physical nature of Darren really comes into play in who wins this fight. Just because he has that ability to connect at a farther distance than Tyron Woodley. And there's some bit of advantage. There are angles in play in terms of where, how high Woodley's going to have to raise his fist to reach Darren Till's face, but it's not like it's a 2 foot difference between the height of these guys. So I just think that the long reach of Tyron Woodley is really going to play a role. But I don't necessarily know if it's incredibly wise for Woodley to go about looking to win this fight on the feet. While Till's slick on the ground, Jason, but I just feel like Woodley has the ability to bully him once he gets him against the cage using that strong base of power.
One of the things that really is interesting about Woodley heading into this fight is the fact that five of his last six opponents have been southpaws. And, of course, that is what Darren Till is here. You know, one of the things that I look at, kind of, I think the keys for Darren Till and things that Tyron Woodley has to be on the lookout for is when they are when Darren Till is able to get in close range, those short elbows. You think about the knockout he had. I can't think of the guy's name off the top of my head of who he had basically knocked him out with the elbow. But also, you know, when they're at range, you know, those kicks that Darren Till likes to throw to the body, that could be very a key for his success. I do think that the first round is going to be more crucial for Tyron Woodley than it's going to be for Darren Till. You know, I think for Darren Till, you kind of, you know, want to, you know, kind of sit back and maybe, you know, sit back, be a little cautious in that opening round. But, you know, if Woodley gets off to a quick start in this fight, you know, let's say he gets a takedown or two in the first round, you know, he lands a couple of those big rights that he's been landed. Darren Till might walk back to that corner with a little doubt in his mind. But if Woodley doesn't get off to a fast start, we know Darren Till, one of the things about this guy, he's a very confident fighter. And that may lead him. I mean, this is one of those things. I think for Darren Till, I think the longer the fight goes on, it may be more to his advantage. You know, I think he could afford to lose a first round and maybe even lose a second round, but then come on stronger as the fight goes on, win that third, fourth, and fifth round. And the other question I do have with Woodley heading into this matchup is it has been, you know, nearly 14 months since his last fight. And of course he suffered that shoulder injury in that fight. You know, if you have to imagine Till's going to be attacking that right arm and that right shoulder, you know, could we see something where Till lands a strike early on in the fight where, you know, maybe it brings back that injury?
Yeah, man, it was back in his debut in the UFC when Darren Till showcased his elbow power, knocking out Wendell Oliveira. And it was in that car. It was back 2015 in Brazil. It was clear that Darren Till was a special fighter. And there were ups and downs, despite the fact he remained unbeaten. I mean, we have seen Darren Till look vulnerable in his last fight against Steven Thompson. That was a bit of a dud. In his fight against Nicholas Dalby, that was a draw. It was back and forth. Both guys had phenomenal moments and phenomenal moments of vulnerability. But we've seen the highlights. His debut in the UFC. Obviously, the fight against Donald Cerrone that really made Darren Till a contender, but we've seen him vulnerable, and I really do think even if you go in those later rounds, I mean, that may be a point. While you think it may favor Till, and it is worth noting just the fact that you mentioned that Woodley has not been in the cage for a while. He spent a lot of time recovering for injury. That may affect your conditioning in rounds 4 and 5. Woodley is still a fighter with plenty of experience in rounds 4 and 5. I mean, he's gone 3 straight times the entire distance of a championship fight. In his last 3 fights, I think he takes pride in that. And I even think later in the rounds, I would favor Woodley just because I think he's going to be able to steal rounds with takedowns. And while I would recommend going straight to the wrestling early on, I do think this is a guy who's very prideful of his stand-up, a guy who's very good in his stand-up, a guy who could theoretically take out Darren Till. And as long as he avoids, you know, the 8 limbs of Darren Till, I think Woodley's going to be in good shape. I think this is a fight that he wins against Darren Till, but Darren Till obviously represents a great threat, and this is a guy who's very volatile when it comes to the potential. He can wreak havoc in the cage, absolutely.
You know, one of the things that's a little interesting note here is that this is Darren Till's first fight in the United States. He has spent a lot of this camp in Las Vegas working at the Performance Institute. Obviously, a lot has been made about his weight, which we'll get into during our buy-sell segment. But, you know, of course, we're both big college football fans. And, you know, the way Till has kind of reacted to this constant question about what's his weight, will he make weight, I kind of relate it to how Nick Saban handled himself after the game on Saturday when Maria Taylor asked him about the quarterback situation, where, you know, clearly I correlate the two, because Darren Till obviously is getting frustrated with constantly getting that question, and where Nick Saban constantly getting, you know, frustrated with people asking him, you know, about his quarterback situation. But, you know, I think in both cases, and Darren Till, you know, when he meets with the media in Dallas this week, he has to understand that until he steps on that scale on Friday, this is going to be the narrative with Darren Till heading in this matchup, because he has missed weight 2 times in his UFC career, 2 times in his last 4 fights. You know, you go back to his fight against Jesse Arari, back in May of 2017. And then, of course, back in May early this year against Steven Thompson, which, you know, one of the reasons that I didn't like the fact that, Darren Till got this fight is the fact of, you know, I don't think you should be rewarded with a title shot after missing weight. But he's got this fight. I think he has got a very good chance to walk away as a victor, but also I just don't think if you're the UFC, it's a narrative you want being pushed out there of Darren Till already talking about going to 185, which we both know that's really where he should be fighting.
Yeah, I don't think this guy's making weight. I don't. And the difference between Nick Saban and Darren Till, Jason, is at least Nick Saban, who is not known for his self-awareness, has enough self-awareness to apologize for his rudeness in his interview. That's not necessarily when I look up Darren Till apology, it has zero results and it says, "Do you mean tapology?" I just think this guy's head is in a different world right now. I think he bit off more than he can chew when he accepted this fight. The UFC should have never put him in a position to take on this fight. This guy weighed 174. For his last fight at welterweight. The fact that he's already talking about middleweight, not to spoil our buy-sell segment, but to be completely honest with you, I can't go out here and say I think Darren Till is going to make weight. I don't think he will.
I will tell you this. There are people that are very confident that he is going to make weight. And, you know, look, in 48 hours from now, from when we're recording this podcast, we're going to know whether Darren Till made weight or not. You know, Woodley has said he's not going to take an opponent on 24 hours notice, which I completely agree with him. That's not in what's best for him. That may be what's best for the UFC, but that's not what's best for Tyron Woodley. And Kamaru Usman will eventually get his shot at the welterweight title. Unfortunately, probably for Kamaru, he's going to be, you know, sitting and waiting, because I do believe the winner of this fight will take on Colby Covington, next. But, I do like Woodley to win this fight. I think that the wrestling is going to be a key with this. I expect to see Woodley get off to a fast start. And I think this is the type of fight that I think Woodley can shut up a lot of his naysayers. And with, you know, maybe being, you know, more hunting for that finish than that we necessarily haven't seen in previous fights.
Yeah, and it's a big opportunity for his legacy to beat another top welterweight, you know, to defend his welterweight championship once again. You're talking about a guy who won the title back in 2016, and to beat three different challengers since then would be a feather in his cap. It would help him move up the welterweight rankings. I think he's going to do so. And I think he's going to get a finish in the third round via strikes against Darren Till.
In terms of our main card picks, I have to imagine a lot of favorites. Obviously, the two fights prior to that, both major favorites in Valentin Shevchenko and Zabit Magomed Sharipov. Who are you picking in Andrade and Kovalevich?
I actually like Kovalevich in this fight. I think she's going to do enough when it does stand to win. And I think she's going to be able to get back on her feet when she gets taken down. Despite picking the major underdog, I do recognize the fact that Jessica Andrade could very well easily take down Kovalevich, put the weight down, and outstrike her on the ground. But I like Carolina to win this fight.
Yeah, I like Carolina as well. I just think that the output that she puts on her feet is going to be enough, but I do like that one. The opening matchup of the pay-per-view, I think this is a fight that likely will not last very long. I would be surprised if this fight makes it into the third round, maybe even a little surprised if it makes it to the second round, and that's Abdul Razik Al-Hassan versus Nico Price. Of course, Nico Price, I mean, who can't remember the unbelievable knockout that he had in his last fight? He's a slight underdog at plus 125. Forgot to mention him. I'm picking Nico Price in this matchup.
I can't blame you, man, but I like Abdul Razik Al-Hassan, but I think it's going to be a fight of inches in which each guy's really has a major chance to win here. Both guys, I think, are coming for the finish. I think we're going to see a finish. I just think Al-Hassan will win, but that's a nice underdog pick by you.
In terms of the FX prelims, I'm going to go Tatiana Suarez, Cody Stamen, Jimmy Rivera, and Charles Byrd. I'll quickly mention on Sterling and Stamen, and this is something that Cody really talked about last week on the podcast, is I expect this fight to go all 15 minutes. But I think it's going to come down to the third round, and I think Cody's going to have a little bit more left to get the victory in this one. But, to me, that's kind of a coin flip fight.
Yeah, I mean, this may be reminiscent of Aljamain back in 2016 when he was losing razor-thin split decisions to Caraway and Rafael Assunção. I think we're going to see a close one against Cody Stamann. I think Cody will be the victor here. I mean, to me, Stamann is just more impressive than anyone that Aljamain Sterling has beaten in his career. You know, we're talking about a very old Hennenbrau that Aljamain beat, not necessarily in terms of age, but in terms of how he fights. So I think Stamann beats Aljamain Sterling. I think Jimmy Rivera is going to be victorious against John Dodson. I just think Rivera is going to really take advantage maybe of cautiousness out of John Dodson. Bird as well against Darren Stewart, and then to me Tatiana Suarez to win, but don't count out Carla Esparza, a veteran's veteran who has the ability to sneak a submission at any point if Tatiana has a mental lapse or starts taking the third round off.
Yeah, you gotta think if Carla wins that fight, that's gotta be like a split decision type fight. Something known Aljamain Sterling, which is kind of a little bit of an interesting note, and just maybe because of the way you view Aljamain Sterling, you don't think of it like this. He's 3-3 in his last six fights.
Wow. That's nuts.
Yeah, but when I saw that stat, I was just, your perceptions of Aljamain, you would not sit there and think, oh, he's 3-3 in his last six.
Yeah, because you think of him as a dynamite bantamweight guy, a guy who has yet to reach his potential, but a guy who, at the very beginning of his UFC run with Matt Serra in his corner, Ray Longo in his corner, you thought this guy's going to be a bantamweight champion, and he just has not gotten there yet. I think there's a chance he will. But when he's faced the top, tippy-top competition, he has gone out there and failed. It's still a fighter in Aljamain Sterling, who is still 29, and this could very well be the start of the run to that championship.
In terms of the early prelims, which, by the way, will be on UFC Fight Pass beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, I'm going to go with the five fighters in the red corner. That's Diego Sanchez, Jim Miller, Irene Aldana, Roberto Sanchez, and Jeffrey Neal.
Yeah, I like Neal. I like Sanchez, as I mentioned. That's the underdog. I would put some money down on Irene Aldana. As much as I want to pick Jim Miller, I think Alex White will beat him, and then Diego Sanchez, just to be sentimental.
And I will not be watching these fights live. We watch them via DVR, as I always say. Like, to be completely honest with you, I will be in New Orleans. So I will. I remember last year we were in New Orleans. There was a pay-per-view. We tried to find a bar that was showing them. We couldn't find any. So this will definitely be a card that I will be watching via DVR. But you know, really do like those FX prelims. I already got my DVR set up to record those fights. But I do want to get into a question that was sent in on the MMAReport.com. Of course, if you ever want to send in a question, you can leave a comment anywhere on the MMAReport.com. I will see it. You can tweet it at me, at Jason_Floyd, or you can shoot me an email, which is Jason@RadioInfluence.com. And Combat Sports Fan asked us this question: what are our top 10 MMA and boxing fights that have already happened or are going to happen in 2018? Now, let me just preface this. I'm not going to sit here and deny. I have not watched a ton of boxing this year, but I will tell you, GGG Canelo, which is next weekend, it is one of my, you know, top 10 fights that I have in here. My top two fights were my clear number one, number two, Justin Gaethje versus Dustin Poirier. Number two, Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero. Outside of that, now these are in no particular order. I just kind of wrote them down. Khabib versus McGregor. Holloway versus Ortega, which is, it sounds like, is going to be in December. Stevens versus Choi, which, of course, took place earlier this year. McDonald Lima, which took place earlier this year. Daily Page, I mentioned GGG Canelo. Rose Joanna 2. And the last fight I mentioned was just a fight that I just enjoyed watching, and that was Kyle Bochniak and Zabit Magomed Sharipov. What do you got, Daniel?
Yeah, again, it exposes our lack of boxing expertise that the only fight we got is GGG Canelo 2. That's the only fight I'm looking forward to. But if Anthony Joshua took on Deontay Wilder, that fight would make the list, I'll tell you that much. I like the way you tackled this one. It seemed like you really put a value in also just the entertainment inside the cage. I went more in terms of like the way I felt about the fight before it actually happened, like that pre-fight hype. Oh, I can't wait to see it. Some of the fights, it got marred by what transpired, but I'll go down 10-1. Things have changed. At one point, we did an exercise, and I had Till Woodley over McDonald Musasi, but Till Woodley is now no longer on my list. And Roy McDonald versus Gegard Mousasi, I'm more looking forward to that fight than Till Woodley as we approach Till Woodley. So that's number 10. Number 9 was Rose and Ioana, too. 8, Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier, which the more I think about it, probably a little too low on the list. But I think just the fact that it's not necessarily a championship-level fight is why I have it there. 7, Miocic and Ngannou. I mean, this felt like an important heavyweight fight at the time. Just a huge deal. 6, Whitaker Romero 2. 5, this fight is on the books for UFC 230. Dustin Poirier versus Nate Diaz. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Nate Diaz back. We have not seen him in the cage since he took on Conor McGregor. And I just cannot wait for this fight. I mean, Dustin Poirier theoretically could have made this list 3 different times with also the fight against Alvarez. Number 4, Miocic Cormier, champion versus champion. There's your super fight. Number 3, Dillashaw Garbrandt 2. Despite not being a boxing fan, I would still put GGG Canelo 2 at number 2. It is just a huge deal. I remember where I was watching the last fight. I was watching that along with, I think it was Texas versus USC. That game was going on. Can't wait for GGG Canelo 2. It just seems like an event. And number 1, Conor versus Khabib is the top fight I'm looking forward to in all of 2018.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly totally forgot about Roy McDonald, Gegard Mousasi. That's got to be in there as well. That's a great, great fight. And by the way, of course, that fight card is going to be on DAZN. I believe DAZN is going to be available in the U.S. starting on Monday. Of course, they're going to do that free. You know, first 30 days are free, and so if you're looking at what you're going to get in that first 30 days, you're going to get the next Bellator event on September 21st. You're going to get the Anthony Joshua fight on September 22nd, and of course you'll get the Bellator card there at the end of the month. Of course, all those welterweight tournament fights are exclusive to DAZN, and one of the things I think is great about DAZN, if you are a cord cutter, you do have the ability to go out there and watch all those Bellator fights legally. You know, that's one of the great things about DAZN. But earlier in the show, you heard Daniel and I previewing Saturday's UFC 228. And if you want to place a bet on the fights, you heard us talking about the betting lines, the place you got to check out is MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell my listeners to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today.
Jason, you know I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. And that's why I am urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay.
Join now and MyBookie will match the MMA Report podcast listeners' first deposit 100% up to $1,000. Use the promo code MMA Report to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code MMA Report when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. And, of course, now it is time for the interview portion of this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Darren Cruikshank, who's going to be taking on Diego Brandão later on this month at Ryzen 13. Then you're going to hear Seth Pazinski, who's going to be fighting Teddy Ash for the middleweight title at Unified MMA 34 on September the 28th. And then the final interview is going to be with Blake Builder, who's going to be taking on Dennis Linton on Saturday night at the King of the Cage event. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, Mask, we're returning to Ryzen. Come up here at the end of September, September 30th, Ryzen 13. It is Darren Cruikshank takes on Diego Brandão. Darren, I appreciate the time. Last time we talked about your love for guns. So are you still out there, you know, having some fun with your guns while preparations for this fight?
Yeah, I actually picked up my game since last time we talked. So I've been competing in three gun at a local stage for about 5 years now. And I just did my first national level match 2 weeks ago. And so you could basically almost say that I'm like a two sport professional.
So how'd you fare in the match?
I actually did really well. So there was, if you do the Pro-Am, there was probably over 500 shooters there. Professional probably 250, and the AMI side was about 250. I took 32nd out of all the pros for overall, and then I took 9th in my class, which is like a weight class kind of deal. ninth in my class, which is a big deal, you know, top 10 for your first national level match.
That's awesome. I'm sure that most of the guys you're competing with are all doing this probably as much as you're training, you know, for your MMA fights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They take it serious.
But you take on Diego Brandão here. I was listening to another interview you did, which was hilarious, where you're talking about Cody Stamann after your last fight, saying, "Hey, I think you're going to fight him next." You know, so but one of the things that really stuck out to me about Diego, and of course, just like you, had fought in the UFC. But I was looking at his losses in the UFC: Darren Elkins, Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, Brian Ortega, which I think says a lot about who he is as a fighter. As you have prepared for this fight, what has stuck out to you about him?
You know, I think he's just a tough individual. You know, that's a big part of, you know, making it to that level of opponents that he's already fought. So, you know, I have respect for the guy's training and all that. But I think I'm a much better fighter than he is, and we'll see that in the fight.
Of course, I think a lot of people would think of Diego as a 145 or not necessarily 155, even though he's been competing at 155. Do you see a difference in him at 155 as opposed to when he fought at 45?
The only difference, like to me, is I fought 55 my whole career. So I'm used to fighting. I'm only 5'8". Majority, I would say 90% of the guys that I've ever fought have all been taller than me, all of them. So it's real. It doesn't happen often when I actually have the reach advantage on somebody, and I like to play a long, nice, long game. So for me to close the distance on a guy that's 6 foot tall, I'm really good at it, you know. But this, he's slightly shorter than I am. I mean, I sized him up at the last fight, you know, because he's in my weight class now. So, you know, even a guy that is my height, I feel like I have the reach advantage on because I'm so good at the long range. And he's, I believe, slightly shorter than I am. In person, he was. I don't know what it says on his, you know, record or whatever, but I do believe I own the outside. And not saying that I'm not good on the inside, I will stick and move and hit and stay in and all that stuff. But I really feel like his striking game, the only thing is like maybe he'll, you know, land some kind of lucky punch. You know, I mean, that happens. It's happened to me in the past, you know, but I just don't see. I think I'm a better fighter on paper than him. And I, you know, it will be a fight. It'll be go back and forth. But I'm 100%, you know, capable of knocking him out.
And it's got to be nice for you to sit there, have another fight where you're going to Japan and you're not fighting a Japanese fighter where everyone in the crowd ultimately is rooting against you.
Exactly. And it's nice because I've got a ton of fights over there now. He's only got one. And I think I have a bigger fan base over there. So, a lot of the fans hit me up all the time. They, you know, and they're like, man, I can't wait to see you fight again. You know, we're rooting for you, blah, blah, blah. So that is really nice.
I mean, this is going to be your seventh fight in Ryzen. I mean, how would you describe your previous six fights as you look back on this run? I mean, is there a way you would just easily sum it up?
If you were to sum up my career there and basically my career everywhere, just exciting. You know, that's why I still have a job as an MMA fighter outside of the UFC. That's done a UFC stint. I'm an exciting fighter to watch no matter what. So that's, you know, I'm entertainment wrapped up in one big ball.
Is there a fine line between being exciting, but then also maybe crossing a line of, you know, reckless is a term that gets thrown out there, but is there a fine line?
Oh, 100%. There's a lot of guys that are out there that aren't very, I would say, technically skilled, but they're definitely willing to take chances, and they do. And that pays off in the end a lot of times. Sometimes it doesn't, though. So I feel like I take chances in my attacks, but they're, I would say, educated chances. You know, they're weighed in my head a certain way, and a lot of times there's a time and a place to do crazy stuff, and I try to pick the great time.
And thinking of those great times, is it more of just kind of as you have evolved and had experience, you just kind of, from, you know, working on the training room to fight night, you just kind of, at this point, you just know when the right time is pull trigger, where maybe as a younger fighter, maybe you weren't exactly sure when to throw that?
Yeah, I mean, I was, even before the UFC, like my amateur days slash like when I was just up and coming as a pro, I was reckless. I was really reckless, and it paid off and got me to the show. But now that, I've gotten, I'd say, smarter in the time to explode on somebody and go after and fly across the cage and or the ring and go 110%. I'm getting pretty good in my old age.
You're not that old. Come on.
I just turned 33, I think.
I turned 37. I turned 37 in a couple of weeks. Yeah, you're a young dude. Yeah.
But I'm also fighting a bunch of young guys too. You know, like, I mean, this is a sport for young guys. And that saying is, you know, be aware of the old guy in a young guy sport. So
I know you've also mentioned that, free agency's come up there. And you said, look, this is a prize fighting game. This is about who's going to pay me the most money. And, you know, I think outside looking in, people say, oh, Darren's got you putting a lot of pressure on himself, kind of feeling, you know, what this could lead to. But for you, is it just like, look, I'm not worried about that. I got to worry about Diego because, I got to show him.
I think I'll always have a job. Like I said before, I'm exciting. This is a pretty important fight. I mean, your next fight is always the most important fight in my eyes. So, me putting on a great show, knocking him out or however it goes, as long as I'm the victor, you know, me going for a different contract or the next contract with Ryzen, I'll have a lot more, things to weigh on if I put on a technique clinic on him. So yeah, it's important.
And of course, anyone I mentioned about, your partner, Cody Stamann there, you both training partners, you're coaching him. He's got a fight coming up here, September 8th at the UFC pay-per-view. You've got your fight September 30th. So how does this kind of work out in terms of your training camp, but, you know, trying to get yourself ready, but also getting Cody ready for his fight?
Yeah, we've been fighting together. I don't know. I lost track. But this isn't our first rodeo when we're getting ready for fights back to back. You know, it's just a process. So I'll stay focused when I'm over there with him. We had a bunch of coaches and guys coming out to his fight during that week. That way I do have training partners and I'll still be able to get all the everything I need to get ready for this fight. I'm always at his fights. He's always at my fights. It's like a duo.
Is it kind of ideal though for you both to have fights at the same time?
Yeah, we're both in camps and ready to go. So it is nice. When one of us is slacking, the other one kind of picks it up. So it's good.
You know, I mean, motivation, I think, is when, you know, what gets you out of bed in the morning. For you now, what is that? What when you're having those days where you're just like, man, I do not feel like getting up. I don't feel like getting in the gym. What is that motivation of why to get there?
You know what? I've always been motivated, self-motivated. So it's like me getting up and going to the gym, that's a normal day process. And when I don't do it, then I'm like, oh shit, what am I supposed to do? Like sit at home and stare at a wall. So, I've never had a problem about like, oh, I don't want to go to the gym or I don't want to train or spar or work hard or anything like that. It's been basically like a lifestyle. It's probably since eighth grade that I've basically lived. So just normal day for me.
I mean, is there part of you that this journey has gone so quick that you don't even realize it's been that long of a journey for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I look back and I'm like, man, I can't believe I did that. Oh, wait a minute. Then I remember something else. I can't believe I did that. I can't believe, you know, I fought there and all this stuff. But, you know, I feel like there's a lot more out there for me to do anyway. So I'll write a book when I'm old. And that's when I'll go back and look at it. But, you know, like I've set some goals and I'm trying to knock them down. And if you stop and wait and just look at the past, then you'll never see what's in the future.
And of course, that next fight is September the 30th, Ryzen 13, of course, available here in the States via internet pay-per-view. Darren, as always, I appreciate the time, and let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me. You guys can find me. Instagram's Darren Cruikshank. Facebook's Darren Cruikshank. And Cruikshank155 for Twitter. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to look to claim the unified middleweight title comp here on September the 28th. Unified MMA 34, man, you're very familiar with Seth Brzezinski. Seth, as always, man, I appreciate time. Coming off a win back the end of last month, quick turnaround. Is this kind of is this what you really like to do, is where you basically, you know, it's just one camp to another?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been in this game for so long that when I was younger, I mean, we used to take, when I cornered my friends, I would take my medicals, mouthpiece, cup, and shorts in case they had somebody there, because we just wanted to compete so much. And, you know, back then as well, like, we would take fight after fight, and a lot of them would fall through. Some of the promotions wouldn't happen. There was all kinds of reasons why. And sometimes I would book three fights, and one out of three would work out. And sometimes I'd book three fights and they'd all work out, and I'd fight a bunch, and that's what I always kind of enjoyed. So, you know, it's getting harder and harder to get fights. You know, I got a lot of experience, and, you know, I've been doing it for a long time. So we booked some fights, and, you know, that one worked out, and we took it. We went and beat them, and then we're getting ready for the next one.
Why do you think it's hard for you to get fights? Is it just because of what you have done in this sport? I mean, do you think it's, you know, kind of, you know, guys maybe just don't want to test themselves against you? What do you think it is?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. You know, I mean, if you ask a promoter, I'm long in the tooth and yada, 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 they're going to look at every way they can shake you down as they can. But if you look at the facts of it, like, you know, in these smaller shows, this is a much better show than some of the ones I've competed in, just to be able to stay busy and stay active. You know, with all these little small shows and stuff, like, a lot of them don't have a whole bunch of money to pay, and guys don't want to fight, you know, someone with almost 40 pro fights and with the level of competition I've competed against for not very much money. So that's generally what it boils down to. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with how the landscape of MMA has changed too. Like, back when I started, you know, we were fighting in bars where people were smoking cigarettes and everything else. And now everyone's kind of like building their careers and waiting for the perfect fight. Their coaches are in it, their management team's in it. Well, there's just so many outside influences, and I personally don't believe in that. I've seen some of the best fighters in the gym, some of the best athletes in the gym waste their career in the gym and never even compete because they're always waiting for that perfect fight. So I've always enjoyed competing. I love being a real mixed martial artist. Like, the only true gauge is to go out and compete. That's the only real way you're going to find your flaws. It's the only real way you're going to find your strengths. And that's the only real way to fine tune them, you know, and in the bigger shows when you're fighting guys where the win ratio and the loss ratio is a millisecond away, it's a little bit different. You take a lot more damage. But even now, I would like to compete more than I was when I was at the later stage of my career in the UFC, you know, once every 9 months, the roster was so full. There's so many different things. Like, I want to fight as much as I can while I can, you know, and it's a short career. Even a really good career is a short career compared to other sports. So I want to get in as many as I can.
When you started fighting in 2005, did you think, you know, end of 2018, this was you would still be doing?
I always wanted to compete as long as I could, because for me, when I found MMA, it was so new I knew the minute I did it, the minute I went into a gym, the minute I fought the first time, I knew I loved it. You know, I knew I had a lot to learn, and I knew I just loved it. I loved competing. I loved the feeling I had going to the cage. I loved the feeling before, after. I just had so much fun, and that was one of the first times, you know, in my life where I just felt so alive at that moment. And I just wanted to do it as much as I could, and it was just fun. Like, it was fun. Like, that's why I did it, because it was fun. And I had a blast, and I love learning the technique, and I wanted to do it as long as I could. That, so I was a young kid. I would wake up in the morning, I wouldn't even think about dinner, you know? So I wanted to compete as long as I could, but at the same time, the sport was so new. The IFL was out. There was so much newness to the sport. I was just thinking about ways to get better every day. And the sport's evolved a great deal since I started.
For a lot of fans that have seen you compete, they're used to seeing you compete at 170 pounds. You know, so what ultimately led you to say, you know what, I'm going to go to 185?
It was my last fight against Leon Edwards. I was, whenever I do go training at Alliance in San Diego with Dominic, you know, I knew Dominic. We met when we were from Arizona, you know, years before. He was in the WEC and I was in USC. We knew each other for years. And, you know, I had, I didn't know it at the time, but apparently behind my back, Dominic and some of the coaches were like, man, there's no way he's going to make weight this time. Like, he's going to miss it. You know, he's going to miss it. He's finally going to have to go to middleweight. He's too big. But I kept making weight. And the last time I fought in the UFC, you know, I was in Poland. Dominic FaceTimed me and said, I was 20, 30 minutes done with the fight. Just got done my medicals, got my checks, got checked out by the doctors. And I get a FaceTime from Dom and he's like, hey, you all right? I say, yeah, I'm good. And he goes, you're going 185 pounds. And I said, huh? And he said, you're moving to 185. I've been watching you in the gym and, you know, I just think it's taking too much out of your body to go to 175 or to 170. It's taking too much out of your body. It's taking too much out of your chin. You know, I've seen you compete. I know you can compete at a high level. I just think you're cutting too much weight and it's starting to drag on you later in your career. And I go, dude, I just fought like 20 minutes ago. And he goes, don't be a wussy, man. Don't be a wussy. Let's fix this. You're moving to 185. So even before I went back, on for the Ultimate Fighter, I really didn't want to. And that's not why I didn't compete as well. I didn't compete as well just cause I didn't go compete well. And that was the end of it. But, it was, you know, it was hard to get down to that weight for a long time. And I just felt like it had ran its course and, you know, here I am at 185. I've been working really hard in the weight room with a strength and conditioning coach, Jason Kamens out of Power MMA. He's a phenomenal coach. And, you know, I've been working really hard to go up to 185 and do it the right way. I feel like a lot of MMA fighters that are a little long in the tooth, they start dropping down in weight when they get older. And in my personal belief, that's the wrong way to go because the guys get faster and more athletic the smaller they get. Pace is higher, and they still hit very hard. So I felt like moving up to 185 was the best choice for me right now in my career.
And now you got Teddy Ash, who's been on a nice little run here. He's fought and unified multiple times. You've talked about it. You've been around this game for such a long time. I'm sure there's not much that's going to surprise you what he's going to bring to the table. What do you see as the biggest challenge that he's going to offer you?
You know, he's good, man. And that's another thing, man. I learned in this game a long time ago. You can't underestimate anybody, you know, and in this game, you got to forget about everything you've done and worry about what's coming because whatever happens in the past, like that's gone. The future is Teddy Ash right now and he's coming up in the game. And if I haven't evolved my game enough, he's going to make me pay for it. So I've been working extremely hard at, you know, always working out with them young guys that come in the gym. Working out with D1 wrestlers that when they get out of wrestler from ASU, we got a great crop of guys that come up through, you know, they get done wrestling and they want to start doing MMA. So we always got young, hungry guys coming in the gym. And those are the ones I always try to work out with. I try to teach them, you know, things I've learned to make their career easier because we didn't get a whole bunch of that. There wasn't a whole bunch of guys with experience when I started. And I always said, man, like if I get in a position to where I have, you know, the knowledge these kids need, I'm going to help them because nobody helped me. And in return, you know, I get to grow with them as well because it's those young guys that come in the gym and them young guys that are out watching MMA since they were 9 years old or 8 years old, those are guys who are coming trying to take your job. So if you can't compete with them, you're in trouble. So that's one thing I've been really focusing on. It's just always working with the young guys coming up, always getting rounds with them and trying to get to evolve with this generation that's coming up, you know, because, you know, in this sport, you can't stop learning. You can't stop evolving because we don't lose by 3 points, man. We get our heads knocked off or we get choked out in front of everybody.
Seth, I really appreciate the time. Final thing here. You know, as you have, you know, mapping out what's kind of what the next, you know, 6 to 12 months like is for you here in this MMA journey, where do you see the next 6 to 12 months for you?
You know, I see myself competing in a bigger promotion. I don't know where, I don't know who I'm going to be fighting, but at 185, I feel like I should be competing with the best guys in the world. I mean, I've proven over time that I can, and I'm going to go prove it again and again and again until, you know, someone puts me in there to compete against somebody in a bigger promotion with the bigger paycheck is really what I'm after. And, you know, I'm just going to compete as long as I can and enjoy as much of this career as I can because, you know, I'm lucky enough to do something I love, man. I love fighting. I love competing. I love learning. I love mixed martial arts, and I want to give it everything it's given me. You know, I've met a lot of really cool people and have a lot of great relationships that are going to last way past this career, and I'm just trying to enjoy every bit of it so I don't sit on my rocking chair saying if I could have, would have. You know, I'm going to try to avoid saying that about my career, and I don't want to stay too long, and I don't want to leave too early, so... Right now, it's Teddy Ash. The rest is a mystery.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing this fight come up here on September the 28th, Unified MMA 34. Seth, I appreciate your time. And, of course, if the fans want to get in contact, where can they do that on social media?
At SethBMMA is my Twitter handle. At SethBMMA is my Instagram. And I try to stay off Facebook because there's a lot of politics. But I'll definitely be going on there from time to time to post links that people can watch the fight at and get all the info they're looking for.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that we've had a chance to talk to before, and he's got another fight lined up. It's going to be at the King of the Cage event coming up here. It is Blake Builder. Blake, man, as always, appreciate the time. Got the win to improve the 2-0 in your last fight. You know, obviously going the distance in that one. What would you say kind of your takeaway from that one was?
You know, it was actually really awesome to go all three rounds for the full 15 minutes because for me, it really made me push and it really exposed certain parts of my game, like learning how to conserve energy, but also understanding where I'm wasting energy. And it's just kind of given me a better understanding of how to approach my game, how to be better prepared for when I do have a fight. And then, of course, it was awesome just because we got to put on Fight of the Night show. I mean, it was just fun.
And, you know, one of the interesting things that Ed was telling me about you is now in California full time, but also saying that you have a company back in Minnesota, a CCTV company. How'd you get involved in that?
Yeah, so it was funny. So this is exactly what happened. I mean, I'm broke, busted, disgusted. I have a girl that I'm dating who dropped me like a bad habit, said I wasn't going anywhere in life. and said I'm never going to make it in MMA. And I didn't have a job and I wasn't looking for one. And like, to be honest, she was probably right, you know? And I had a dream and it was, seeking ye shall find, knocking the door shall be answered. And that kind of impressed upon me like, hey, I gotta get rid of my ego and I gotta ask for help. So I put on Facebook, I go, hey, looking for a job. If there's any openings anywhere, let me know. My buddy was the owner of a GNC, hired me on. And then I had a call from a guy who was like, hey, come on in and might be for you, might not be, but come check it out. And his name is Tom Ronan. And he just took me under his wing and just kind of showed me how to do this trade. And me and him have been working together ever since. And he was one of the guys that believed in me. And he would send me out on sales calls and all this. And I've been doing it ever since. It was like three, four years ago.
And you got this fight coming up here. And I mentioned you're coming off that win back in July. So what's been going on the last month and a half or so with you?
Yeah, so I mean, I came out with a few stitches in the lip, a couple in the head, and a couple under the eye. So I went back home, and usually after my fights, I go back home to visit, and I mainly go back to work though, you know, because and you know, at the beginning levels of MMA, it's great, but it's hard to make a living. So I go back and I work. I see sponsors. I see friends and family, and for me, that just rejuvenates me. You know, because I go back to the hometown and everybody's really happy for you. You know, the people that are there for you are really happy for you and like seeing the success. So I just went back to I went to Vegas. My buddy got engaged, then went to Minnesota, saw family in Georgia, and now I'm back to training camp and in full effect.
You know, and looking at your opponent here, Dennis Lipton, one of the things that really stuck out to me when I opened up his topology page is, you know, he fought back earlier this year, back in May, but that was his first fight since 2014. Is that kind of a little bit of a challenge in terms of preparing for him? Because, I mean, do you really want to go back to fight footage from 4 years ago? I mean, or is it really, there's only one real fight to look at to kind of get a gauge of what you think he may do?
Yeah, you know, for me, I'm not one to look at footage on my opponents. I leave that to my coach. I just do what he tells me to do. For me, I'd rather focus on what I'm going to do than what my opponents are going to do, if that makes sense.
Oh, totally,
and for me,
yeah.
I'm just focused on going in there and adapting. And I mean, if you look at the fighter I was 2 months ago compared to who I am now, it's a night and day difference. You know, so I think looking at old footage gives you an idea of what they used to be like and possible tendencies of what they might do. But I'm focused on just going in there, adapting right away, and just implementing what I plan on doing, you know, push the pace and just break this guy.
How much, I mean, obviously, in talking about how you don't try to pay too much attention to your opponent, I mean, that's something you hear a good amount of times with fighters. But I'm sure you're looking at your own film and trying to break tendencies, tells, you know, hey, if I throw this kick, I tend to throw this. I mean, is that a lot of kind of your preparations for fight is trying to break those tendencies that you have and so that your opponent's picking up on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily like breaking, like when I do this, I do that. It's more of like, I need to make sure that what I'm doing is efficient, that what I'm doing, gets the job done in the best way. It's like, there's this, I forget his name, but he's a Thai fighter in glory. He's gonna throw the left kick. He's a southpaw. That's all he throws, but nobody can stop it. Nobody can stop it, you know? So it's like when you get to a certain point, it's like people can know what you're going to do, but it's kind of like Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until they get hit. Once you get hit, bam, it's like, okay, What am I gonna do? I knew it was coming. It's like, but it's still hitting me, you know. So I prefer to adapt in there. And for me, I just ask my coach, hey, what do we need to work on? What do you see in me that are weaknesses that stand out to you? And then we just implement that right away, correct them, and move forward.
I come from a football background, and the best way I describe that is you want to get to the point where you go, we're running behind the left guard, try to stop us. You know, and I think that's kind of an analogy of like, look, you know what, I'm going to tell you, I'm throwing a right hand, try to stop me. I mean, that's what we're all trying to perceive, no matter what we're doing in life for you, whether it's a fighter or whatever everybody else is doing out there. But, you know, as you look at this fight and kind of what lies ahead for you in the rest of 2018, is there a roadmap of kind of how you want to, you know, finish off this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so what we plan on doing is taking this fight, coming out healthy afterwards, you know, enjoy maybe a good meal or two, and then, you know, and then honestly get right back to it, you know, like, I wanna show that I'm in here training hard and getting ready to fight. You know, so I wanna get fights, and the goal is actually to have two more fights by the end of the year after this one. You know, so we wanted to stay busy. I told my manager at the beginning of the year, I go, hey, if we can, let's go 10-0. You know, like for me, it's just I have this unwavering faith of it doesn't matter who's in front of me. It's just a matter of getting the fights. It's a matter of like just having people sign the contract and show up for it. And I'm not being cocky or arrogant, you know, and I think it might be mistaken as that, but I just have this unwavering belief and faith that the hard work that I'm putting in will pay off.
Confidence. That's another word I would use. I mean, I know the word, you know, cocky kind of does get thrown around in the fight game, which I always say, if you don't have confidence, how can you walk in a cage on fight night? I mean, to me, if you're not confident walking in there thinking you're the best dude on the planet, you're kind of already defeated.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm training with some of the best guys that the country has to offer, you know, at one of the best gyms with one of the best coach, with a lot of the best coaches, you know. So it's like I just feel as though we're on the right track, and we're just doing everything that we need to do in order to make the dream a reality.
And that gym is Team Yoyama, which of course a lot of UFC guys out there. What's and final thing here, Blake, I appreciate time. What is the best piece of advice that coach has given you?
honestly, you know, Coach Colin is a hard ass, and he is a former football coach, and it's basically, nobody gives a fuck about how you feel. Shut the fuck up and get to work. You know, it's like, coach, I'm tired. Cool, work. It's like, coach, I think I'm going to throw up. Cool, throw up, get back to work. It's like, coach, this weight cut is affecting me. All right, cool. Have a little bit of water, eat a banana. Let's get back to work. You know, it's denying yourself of like all the excuses and doing it for your reasons. That's really what I found is it's just like quit having all the excuses and start having the reasons of why you're doing what you're doing. And that's what he instills in us without saying it. It's kind of like, hey, you're tired. Well, so is everybody else. Let's get to work.
And you get back to work here at the King of the Cage event. Going to be taking on Dennis Lipton. Blake, as always, I appreciate time. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
You can go to my Instagram. It's Blake the Builder, BlakeTheBilder, not Builder. Blake the Builder. And follow me on Facebook, Blake Builder. Twitter, Blake the Builder. and give me a shout out, send me a message, say what's up, don't be a stranger.
Daniel, there was my conversations with Darren Cruikshank, Seth Pazinski, and Blake Builder. Just some notes from those interviews. Darren Cruikshank going to be a free agent. So if he gets that win here, going to be kind of interesting to see. I mean, and in the interview, hear him talk about, you know, it's about, getting the most money that's going to be offered to him. So we'll see kind of what that means for him. Seth Pazinski moving up to 185 pounds and talked about how Dominic Cruz really played a massive role into him going up to 185 pounds. And Blake Builder, a young guy fighting originally from Minnesota, now out in California, training out there. Definitely a guy that you want to pay attention to. So I appreciate all those guys coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Those interviews will also be available on the MMA Report YouTube channel, which you definitely want to check out. Over on the MMA Report YouTube channel, you can check out all the interviews from last week's podcast. Also got an interview up with Zach Otto, who is looking to fight Alex Morono at the UFC Milwaukee card in December. One of the things, Daniel, that really stuck out to me about Zach is how open he was about the loss to Sage Northcutt and the things that, you know, I didn't take it as he was making an excuse. It was more of he was just sitting there telling you what happened, talked about, the health issues he had, you know, the week of the fight, and kind of it was just a very interesting thing. And by the way, Sage Northcutt is now a free agent, which we're going to get into now here in the buy-sell segment. Let's start with Sage Northcutt. Sage was on Ariel Helwani's show on Tuesday and said that he's now a free agent. Are you buying or selling Northcutt's next fight will take place outside the UFC?
Look, if you're Bellator, you gotta kick the tires. You gotta, you know, this is a fighter in Sage Northcutt that people know. He went viral. There was a when he was fighting, he went viral. You go up to any Joe Blow in the bar, they probably have a general idea of the real life Super Saiyan Sage Northcutt. He's also won 3 fights in a row in the UFC. A lot of value for Bellator. I don't think they sign him, though. I believe that Sage Northcutt's next fight will be in the UFC, so I am selling that, Jason. I think the UFC recognizes his potential, and I think they have enough capital to outspend what other companies like Bellator or Ryzen would do.
I sell this as well. I do think his next fight's in the UFC. I think that ultimately he's going to use free agency to his advantage to get the best deal out there. But let me just throw this scenario out there. You're Oscar De La Hoya. You are trying to get the most people to watch your inaugural MMA event. Are you not kicking the tires on Sage Northcutt, Logan Paul?
Oh, my God. Dude, honestly, I don't think Sage Northcutt, Logan Paul would do better business than Logan Paul versus another YouTuber.
That's true.
I think people want to see Logan Paul win a fight. I mean, Logan Paul will get his ass kicked by Sage Northcutt. I mean, it would be murder. I don't even know if you could get that license, right? Like, Logan Paul's not good at fighting, you know.
Oh, Sage, come on. You think your home state of Texas would not license that fight?
Valid point. Valid point taken.
My home state of Florida would license that fight.
Yeah, that's true, man. I mean, Logan Paul's next fight probably does over a million buys. No matter who he fights, to be honest with you. It's one of those momentum-building things. I won't be buying it, though.
This is the thing. Like, it was kind of comical to me to see, you know, after Logan Paul, you know, kind of, you know, and I don't know if he was just trolling the UFC on this one or and trolling other people about mentioning about, fighting in the UFC. And, you know, Sage was one of those guys respond. I saw a ton of UFC fighters respond. And I'm just like, guys, you have to understand that if the UFC signed CM Punk, I don't know why you would be so against them signing Logan Paul, because it would all be about, you know, I mean, look, when you look at the amount of money that he brought in on a YouTube versus YouTube fight, I mean, come on. I mean, of course the UFC and Bellator is going to kick the tires.
Oh, yeah. This guy went on pay-per-view and he got 800,000 people to buy on the internet. You can't not be serious about it. Especially if you've already sold your soul, you've already gone about showcasing you don't necessarily value the whole sporting aspect of the sport. So, you know, combat sports is based around putting people in the cage that generates eyeballs, and that's what Logan Paul does. You know, personally, if I was running an MMA promotion, I would probably go about doing business where Logan Paul doesn't get on my radar. But if you're the UFC, how can you not?
Up next here in Buy Sell, you know, we talked about Darren Till, and you kind of alluded to this earlier. So, I'll, you know, buy or sell, Darren Till makes way. I'm going to buy this, Daniel, because I think there's so much on the line that he has to make weight.
I don't think Darren Till does good with pressure and making weight. I know there are people around him that are confident that he's making weight. This guy has had the opportunity to weigh in for welterweight four times. The last four times, he's missed it half, twice. He weighed in 176 four fights ago or three fights ago, 174 the last fight, and he looked on death's door when he weighed in last time out. I just think this is a fighter who's very, 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 very well aware that his body means he should be a middleweight, and I think this has all the makings of a catastrophe in which Darren Till misses weight, and we're left with Shevchenko Montano as the main event of UFC 228.
Oh man, let's hope that's not the case, because I do definitely want to see Woodley and Till. Another one that we have on the UFC it was last week, I want to say, Dana White came out and said that he's confident that UFC 229 will sell 2 million pay-per-view buys. Buy or sell, the pay-per-view gets 2 million buys. Daniel, I'll sit there and say, I hope Dana White is right, but I'm selling this because I just don't see it. Because ultimately, is for it to sell, you know, is Conor McGregor going to go from a $1.4 million, you know, sell fighter to a 2 million? Because I don't think Khabib is going to add, you know, an additional 500,000 pay per view buys. To me, this is all about Conor McGregor, and I don't think they can hit 2 million. I hope they do, but I just don't think they will.
Look, I don't think Khabib is a good star on his own, but I think when you're looking at Conor fights, you got to find people who represent a great foil. And I think in relation to Conor McGregor, Nurmagomedov's star power is elevated to a high level. He comes across as a great foil. There's great animosity between him and Conor, and there's plenty of ways to go about marketing this fight. I mean, I go to ESPN.com today. One of the top headlines, Namajunas is still traumatized by McGregor attack. I mean, I feel bad for Rose. But it kind of showcases how much in the consciousness of the casual sports fan Conor McGregor has steeped into since we last saw him fight in the UFC. And that's why I am buying this. I think a lot of people, whether they like to admit it or not, care about Conor McGregor. And 2 million buys is very difficult to do for a UFC show. It's unheard of. I think Conor does it.
Yeah, I hope he does. I wouldn't be confident that it's going to sell 2 million buys, but definitely going to be a lot of people interested. Our final buy sell is related to PFL. Of course, their regular season is now over. Now they are getting ready for the bracket phase of this field. And buy or sell, the lightweight bracket is the most interesting playoff bracket.
I screwed up when I pitched this question, Jason. I did. Because I was the one that pitched this buy or sell, and it's clear that the lightweight bracket, as good as it is, you got Will Brooks at number two. I'm selling this. I'm wrong. The featherweight bracket's way better. I'm an idiot. It's clearly the featherweight bracket. It's Siler Malagari, round one. Andre Harrison may meet Lance Palmer in the semifinals. I am freaking selling this. I screwed up. The featherweight tournament is the top bracket. Absolutely.
I kind of figured when you submitted this question to me that you really had not really looked at the featherweight bracket because, you know, I mean, look, it is when you look at all the playoff brackets, it's no question featherweight and lightweight are the best two brackets out there in terms of fights, in terms of name value. You know, when you look at that featherweight bracket, you know, obviously, I think when this PFL started, I don't think there was an envision of Andre Harrison, Lance Palmer meeting in the semifinals. I think the envision was have those as the number one, number two seed, and then they meet in the finals. Andre Harrison, the number three seed, Lance Palmer, the number two seed. Of course, these seeds are based on, you know, how many points you got in the regular season. Steven Seiler, of course, a two-stoppage victory, so he's the number one seed. He takes on Nazarino Malagari. Wasn't Malagari your, like, under-the-radar guy to win?
Yeah, he's going to win the whole thing. It starts on October 5th. It's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, you look at just of what potentially the semifinals could be in this tournament. And by the way, the quarterfinals and semifinals are on the same night. That is something to play into this, and that's where I think it could be an advantage. For guys like a Steven Seiler who are finishers. Andre Harrison, not necessarily a finisher. I mean, you have to wonder. I mean, of course, a lot of this is going to play into is how healthy do you walk out of that first fight going into that second fight? And, of course, that's going to be in New Orleans on Friday, October the 5th is when the featherweight tournament is going to start. The other matchups, you got Timur Valiyev against Alejandro Almeida. Andre Harrison going to take on Popo Bezeja. That's a rematch from when they fought in Titan, which Bezeja took that fight on relative short notice. And Lance Palmer going to take on Max Colga in the opening round. The lightweight tournament is going to be on Saturday, October the 13th. Be interesting to kind of see, can they get a lot of publicity that week? Of course, that night is also going to be, that's Shell versus Fedor, so they may kind of struggle there. Johnny Case gets into this tournament without even, because Jason and I missed weight, so he's the 8th seed. Chris Wade, Robert Watley, an interesting matchup there, 4-5. Will Brooks, the number 2 seed, taking on Rashid Magomedov. That's an interesting opening matchup for Will Brooks.
Oh, that is an absolutely tough opening matchup for Will Brooks. And I tell you what, though, you know what sticks out to me is the freaking middleweight tournament. We're seeing it again. We're running it back. Welterweight tournament, I'm sorry. We're running it back. Ray Cooper III against Jake Shields.
That was brutal to watch the first time.
I can't believe that fight's happening again. That's maybe the flaw of the bracket, because we do not need to see that fight again. Who knows? Maybe Jake Shields will find himself after October 20th on his way to New York. Probably not.
Yeah, of course, that welterweight tournament is going to be on Saturday, October the 20th. That'll also be the same night as the middleweight tournament as well. The light heavyweight tournament is going to be on Saturday, October the 13th, same night as the lightweight tournament. Vinny Magalhães is the number 1 seed. I mean, he clearly is the guy that is a favorite leading into that. But, Sumino Rama as the number 7 seed, someone to maybe pay attention to. He does have a tough matchup in the opening round against Max Grisham. Your heavyweight tournament will be on that Friday, October the 5th, with the featherweight tournament. Obviously, you got some notable names in the heavyweight tournament: Barossa, Copeland, May, Nicholson, Lenz, Rochalt. Really the interesting part about this PFL is going to be that you've got to fight 2 times in 1 night to get to that final. At the end of the year, that's going to be an interesting kind of storyline to watch to see, is there any fighters who win that opening matchup that do not medically get cleared to get to that next round? So, a lot of this PFL tournament, you got to have some luck on your side.
And when you have 5 different opportunities for things to go wrong, things will go wrong. But 1 or 2 times will probably go right. It'll look efficiently, and I am looking forward to watching these guys compete twice in 1 night.
Yeah, I mean, I hope people tune in because, and just as an industry, we need the PFL to succeed. I think everyone can sit there and agree about that. We need to see the PFL succeed because that's going to be, something that'll be very interesting. So, I may not be watching live, but, definitely it's going to be on the DVR.
Absolutely. The PFL brackets have my interest completely. I am looking forward to it, and I'm going to be watching each and every broadcast again. May not be watching it live just like you, but it's something we'll be talking about, previewing, and breaking down.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, especially with those tournaments starting the night before Khabib Conor. I mean, they're not going to get a lot of media coverage. I think we both know that. But it will be interesting to see, do fans tune in on that Friday night?
Yeah, and especially like what kind of momentum moving forward, not only in that Friday night, but what you're going to get on December 31st when you have each championship fight. If that card itself in New York gets a lot of momentum, that's when you really want to peak. And I can tell you this much. I mean, running on December 31st is a tough one, but who knows? Maybe they will get some kind of momentum on that New Year's Eve buzz.
Here's my question about the New Year's Eve card. Because I believe I saw that's a nighttime card in New York City. And maybe I'm wrong on that aspect. But how are you going to get people in and out of that building with everything that goes on in New York City on New Year's Eve?
I think they're only worried about getting them in there. And once I get the money, who cares? But I have no idea. I can't provide you an answer. It sounds insane, honestly. It really does. I mean, there's one place where there's too many people on New Year's Eve. It's New York. And that's the same night they're running a card.
I know a lot of people, like, that's like kind of like a bucket list thing for them. But that would not be, I would not want to be in New York City on New Year's Eve.
No.
Because it's just wall-to-wall people. I'm like, no, man, I want my space.
Exactly. I'm not a people person, and I would get claustrophobic. That just sounds horrifying to me. I would need so much Germex.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, definitely looking forward to UFC 228 this weekend. As I mentioned, we'll not be able to watch that fight card live, but we'll be catching it via DVR. Of course, I'll be in New Orleans for the start of the NFL regular season. Of course, working for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Radio Network. We play there in New Orleans. Definitely one of my favorite road spots. Always get some good food there on that Saturday night. And great people watching on Bourbon Street.
I can't wait to get your report on the observations, Jason. Bourbon Street sounds amazing. Every time you describe it, it sounds like you're going to see some crazy stuff. And feel free to send me whatever insanity you see.
Yeah, you see some... you see some interesting things. There's no doubt about that. But do want to thank everyone for checking out this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com. You can subscribe, rate, and review the MMA Report podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. Coming up on next week's edition of the podcast, going to be joined by a couple of fighters. Also going to be joined by Coach Eddie Cha, who coaches out at the MMA Lab, coaches Benson Henderson, Henry Corrales, among others. Also, be joined by Pat Pitlick, who is going to be a part of that Unified card. Also going to talk to a Northeast local fighter, Brandon Marote, who's going to be fighting on the Combat Zone card coming up on September the 21st. So be sure to check that out. Also, be sure to check out our sponsor of this week's podcast, MyBookie. Join MyBookie now, and they will match the MMA Report podcast listeners' first deposit 100% up to $1,000. All you got to do is use the promo code MMA Report to activate that offer. So if you're looking to place a bet on Saturday's UFC 228, maybe you like one of those underdogs, maybe there's a prop bet you like, you definitely want to check out our friends over at MyBookie. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Rush the Field quick fix on Radio Influence.
Nick Saban was a bit of a jerk this weekend, Chris, when he overreacted to Maria Taylor from ESPN's post-game question about what he thought about his quarterbacks after that game. And then he has to come out and say and call her and apologize. And then after all of that bickering, he names Tua the starter for this weekend. Why is he so picky about this? And why does he get so upset when people are just asking simple questions?
You know, I've known Nick for a long time. And one of the things that, you know, we normally our conversations, well, most 99% of the time they're revolved around football, but there's some issues, and I've had conversations with he and his wife, Terry, that, you know, he people might say, well, he don't care what people think about him. That's not true. I can tell you that he does care, and it does bother him when he's criticized. And one of the things I've always told him, and Terry, his wife, have told him, look, if you're going to come off as a curmudgeon and sometimes be a jerk, some people will see you as a jerk. You're going to have people that are going to love you regardless. But that's just kind of the way it is. And he completely mishandled this situation. The young reporter, Maria Taylor, did a great job.
Phenomenal
great
job.
Question.
And after Nick Saban said, quit asking, she goes, I hear you. And then she followed up with a normal question. I thought she was a rock star that night.
She was phenomenal. She did nothing wrong. She did not only nothing wrong, she did everything as exemplary as you could do for the job that she was doing, which is why Nick Saban realized, hey, I was wrong. And it's not easy for guys to do that. And he called and apologized. And, you know, good for doing that.
Rush the Field with Scott Seidenberg and Chris Leandry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.